So it's good to be here. Jacob called me 3 weeks ago to ask me, I'm going to Belize. Can you do the thing? 3 weeks? I need 3 months. I don't do 3 weeks. It's kind of stressful. I need 3 weeks just to repent. Then maybe. I was talking to Scott Henry about it. Because, all right, to be honest, I've been kind of in sort of a blech place for a while. It's been, and I think I'm coming out of it now, in part largely because of some prayers that I've really felt, and I want to thank you guys for that. But, yeah, I've been feeling some stress and some kind of yuckiness, and then Jacob calls me. I'm like, I'm the last person that should be talking to anybody. And so I was talking to Scott, and he's like, what's your problem? And I go, I don't know. I just don't think I have anything. I'm empty, I got nothing. He says, maybe that's your message. And I said, that's actually pretty good. Because that's pretty much, actually, that's not so profound. What's profound is that's always the case. We just don't always notice it. So I got nothing. In fact, that was going to be the title. But I thought that'd be kind of a downer, so. But it's true. And it's true for all of us. That's where God uses us, when we realize we've got nothing. So anyway, to warm up, I'm going to do a little talk on football. A little football talk. It was a pretty good weekend for Michigan, so for both teams, so let's talk a little football. I played a little football in high school. That's right, I have a past. I played for a year, a whole year, and that was enough. Yep, that was fine. Check that box. I won't be doing this for a living. But that year, I do have some memories of it. And it was kind of cool to be able to walk around and say, I'm on the football team. Just saying, I'm on the football team. Oh, yeah, no, I can't. I got practice today because... game day, we get to wear our jerseys to school because I'm on the football team. That was a tight end. Cheerleaders would decorate our locker on game. They still do that?
Yeah.
Do they? That's kind of cool. Walk in, you see your name, balloons and stuff. It's the most attention I ever got from a cheerleader, but it was cool. I liked it. So there's football. I don't remember many of the games, except we lost most of them. But I don't remember a whole lot else about the games, playing in the games. I do, however, remember the practices. Oh, yeah. I remember the practices, probably because we practiced a whole lot more than we played games, which is kind of profound, actually. And, I remember getting bloodied and dirty and crashing into people for 3 hours every day and coming home just... And I remember down-ups. Anybody know about down-ups? Raise your hand if you've ever done down-ups. Well, look at that. Lots of us. It's a universal illness. Not just our little team, down-ups. We did them every day. At the beginning of practice, and sometimes to end practice, depending on how well practice went, we would do down-ups. Now, I was warned about this by people before I joined the team. Oh, you're going to play football. Watch out for the down-ups. You're going to do down-ups. I thought maybe, would anyone like to demonstrate it? We'll get there. I would, but I don't want to. And I thought, what's a down-up? You mean like push-ups? Push-ups. You do push-ups to cool down from down-ups. You'll say. So I went to my first practice thinking, okay. And sure enough, we start out with down-ups. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with this demonic thing, allow me to elaborate, if not illustrate. So what you do at the down-up is you stand up and you're in your rows, and you're all dressed up in your pads, 20 pounds of plastic or whatever, and you're like that kid from the Christmas story, and you're just standing, what now? And so this is a down-up. The coach will say, all right, let's go, get them up. And so you got to start running in place. You don't go anywhere. You're just running in, also profound. But you're running in place, and you get your knees up. You got to get those thighs parallel to the ground. This is football. Okay? And then you do that for a few seconds, and then he hits the whistle. Tweet! And when he does that, that's your cue to hurl yourself headlong onto the ground, right, with abandon. You just, boom, hit the ground, not a pad, the turf. And then as soon as that happens, you pop right back up as if the ground is bouncing you up, and it's not. And then you continue running. And when that has been accomplished, you have done a down-up. That's one. Just one. And you're also supposed to holler the number you're on when you hit the ground. So when you hit the ground, there's one, and jump back up. And then he hits the whistle, boom, two, and get back up. And that, there you go. Now we're doing down-ups. And I remember we did these, and I'm the first time, and I get to 3, 4, 5 down-ups. These are down-ups. And I'm thinking, what's the big deal? Throw yourself down on the ground, get back up. This is what everyone's all up about? Come on. I live with an older brother. Bring your down-ups, okay? This was nothing. So we keep going, though. We get to 9 and 10 and 15, you know, and we're still going. I'm looking around. We're all, you know, and I'm thinking, yeah, I think we got it. You go down, you get up. We've pretty much perfected the down-up. You get to 20, and it's like, all right, is this it? You know, keep going. And 25, and now I'm starting to feel a little bit, you know, and the breathing, and you got grass stuck in your face mask, and your arms, because you're always hitting like that, and your legs, and then you get to 30 of them, and you're just going, seriously, really? We've done them. We've got it. You get to 40 of them, and now you're like, all right, look. I was okay with the first 5 or 10, right? This is starting to become an issue for me, all right? Seriously. You get to 45, and now your legs and your chest and your breathing and your lungs are screaming because you can't get enough air. You get to 50 of them, your throat's on fire. I just want some water. This was the early 80s, and I think science hadn't yet caught up with the fact that water's a necessity because we didn't get any. You know, you can drink in the off season, right? So, no, there's no water. You just want, like, anything, you know. And your legs feel like mush, and you can't. You got that cramp that you get, like, everywhere when you're out of shape and you're trying to do cardio. You know the cramp? It's brutal. You get to 50 or 60 of these things, and you're just going, I just came here to play football. I haven't even seen a football. What is this madness? I mean, when does it stop? Why are we doing this? It seemingly has nothing to do with football. And when does it stop? Why am I going through this pain that seems to have no point? And when does it stop? Is that starting to sound familiar? You get to 75 of these things, and now you're thinking about home and mom and dad, and will I ever see them again? And I really love my sisters. And this goes on, and eventually it stops. And then you can start practice. You can start running, and we start practice, and at the end of that, you get home, and you open the door, and you go, I'm on the football team. And then someone says, well, good, if you're done playing, you've got chores and homework, get busy. Those are down-ups, and we did them every day. Dozens and dozens of them. Now, in the past 30-some years, I've watched a lot of football games. I've been to some. I've watched junior football, high school football, college football, professional football. I'll probably watch it again this week. And I've seen a lot of different teams and a lot of different games, a lot of different things go on the field. I have never yet seen a game where they blow the whistle, the clock starts running, the ball is kicked off, and people start running in place and throwing themselves on the ground. And then getting back up and running in place and throwing themselves on the ground again. I've never seen it on offense. I've never seen it on defense, special teams. Nobody does this during the game. You would think something we spent so much time perfecting the nuance of throwing yourself would have some application in football. But it doesn't exist. It has nothing to do with the game directly, does it? Why do we spend so much time doing it? So this went on the whole season. But I noticed something as we went along. As the year wore on, I noticed that these down-ups got less and less awful and strenuous and traumatic. And lo and behold, after a certain amount of time, you could do more of them, as if. You could endure it. Your lungs expanded and you didn't need as much air. You got in shape so that cramp disappeared. Your legs didn't seem to notice all of that abuse. You didn't even feel it because you got in shape. And amazingly enough, at some point, it dawns on us, this pointless, brutal, sadistic activity actually has a point, has a purpose. It didn't make me a better football player in the technical skilledness, but what it did is it trained us in at least two different ways. One is physical and one is mental. Physically, we were trained so that we could do more, do it longer, do it harder, and endure more abuse, because football, if nothing else, is a lot of abuse, right? So we were conditioned. We were trained physically, but we were also trained mentally. We learned to ignore despair, keep going, don't get discouraged. Even when you don't think you can go another one, maybe you can. You don't know when this is going to stop, just hang in there, don't quit. You gain a don't quit mentality. And both of those things have everything to do with football and everything to do with pretty much any discipline that you might do, is the ability to keep going. Because in football, it isn't necessarily the most talented team that wins. A lot of times, it's the team that can hang in there a little longer than the other guy, that can run a little faster or a little longer and put up with more and doesn't give up mentally. That's what we were being trained for. I didn't appreciate it at the time, but I do now. So those two things, being physically trained and mentally trained, I could sum up in one word, and that is we were gaining endurance. We were gaining endurance. Now that's a lonely little word to us in the West. We don't talk about it. We don't use it. I could spell it if you need me to. But endurance is not really something we think about too much. I don't maybe appreciate the need for endurance, because this is America, and we don't endure things in America. We buy them, and we sell them, and we acquire them, and we create, and we make our own little space around us, and we have the ability to engineer our lives to engineer out a lot of discomfort and unpleasantness, don't we? I mean, when you think about the options that we have here, it's pretty astounding. There's very little in our world and in our life that we can't change if we don't want, if we don't like it. We have a lot of freedom and a lot of power and options to either buy, create, change, trade, so that we're not uncomfortable. If I don't like what I'm wearing, I go get something else. If I don't like where I'm living, I don't have to put up with that. I'll go somewhere else. If I don't like my neighbors, I'll get new neighbors. If I don't like my family, I can get a new one. If I don't like what I'm driving, or if I don't like the color of what I'm driving, I don't have to put up with that. 3 years? That's way too long to own a car. Get it out of here. Right? We don't even have to put up with our leaders, supposedly. We have the ability to choose our... Do you realize that that's kind of rare? Particularly throughout history. The ability and the privilege of choosing who rules us and what they rule, what laws they have, is something that vast majority of history would have no idea what you're talking about. The church was born into a world where they had nothing to say about anything. They were just trying to survive. But we are different. We have rights. If I don't like my church, I don't have to put up with you. There's another one right down the road. We got churches everywhere. I don't have to stay here. I'll find one I like, right? It's true. Not everybody can say that. I don't think in China, in their little home churches where they're trying to stay out of trouble, they're thinking, I don't think I'm really, you know, I think I'll find another one. I think they're just so happy they've got a Bible in their Mandarin language that they just didn't notice anything else. But we're a little different. We have options. And I'm not saying that's bad. It's a blessing. It's the thing I would point to in selling you on America. It's the greatest place to live. You know, so those aren't bad things, but unfortunately, at least for me, it has made endurance really not that necessary. I meant to say this before I started it. Maybe I did, but what I'm doing here today is more of a testimony than a teaching. I've realized that in the last couple of days as I'm going through all these papers. It's like, this is mostly about me. So if it doesn't apply to you, then and that's fine, but just call it a testimony for right now. I don't really do endurance very well because I've never really had to. And therefore, it's very easy for me to develop an entitlement attitude, okay? Because if things don't go well for me and I have problems and I'm stressed, I don't have a paradigm necessarily to accept that. See, that the early church not only expected, but they accepted suffering. They expected it, and they accepted it. I don't think so for me. I feel that I have rights, and I don't think I have to put up with that. And when things don't go my way, and I'm frustrated, stressed out, and upset, My baseline is like, something's broken. Something's broken. This shouldn't be happening to me. Why is this happening to me? Right? I shouldn't have to put up with that. We have a Bill of Rights. I have rights. Life, liberty, and happiness. Those are rights. I think it's in the Constitution. Well, pursuit of happiness. I left that out. Yes. I should be happy. Things should be going my way. And when they're not, it means something's wrong. And God says, yeah, something's wrong. You live in a fallen world. That's not what I mean. Something's wrong. I shouldn't have to be frustrated. I shouldn't have to be putting up with this because I'm an American. And we have rights. And we have rights. We get new rights all the time, don't we? We have a right to education and healthcare and housing and success. We have a right to be successful. Did you know that? We have a right to success. And if I work hard, I should be successful. And I get to decide what success is, by the way. Right? And when it doesn't happen the way I want it to, I get offended, and I get mad, and I get depressed, and I get dark. Because suffering shouldn't happen to me. I've had I've had a lot of employees over the year. We have. And I remember one time, we're always in people's homes, and usually they're nicer homes than we live in. That's why we have jobs. And I remember a guy go, wow, I wish I had his money. And I said, so you're a thief. What? Well, you said you want his money. No, it's not what I mean. I just want to be like that. Oh, are you willing to do what he did to be like that? Oh, I just want the money. Well, good luck with that. We have a right to success. And so as a result, hardship comes as a shock and as an insult. And I say, God, why don't we serve like the king of everything? Doesn't he own it all? He has all power and he likes me. So shouldn't everything be going my way? Right? What is this? Why? And so I go to God and I whine a little bit, and And God has a number of responses that he deals with me. Sometimes he's very gracious. Sometimes he takes away suffering. Sometimes he provides people to pray for me. And other times he goes, you know what? Open up Google. Type in the rest of the world. Rest of the world. And hit enter. And then you were saying, and I realized that, oh my goodness, I don't know anything about suffering. I don't know anything about hardship. I'm looking around here, and there are people I could point out that know a lot more about suffering and pain than I do. In fact, you should be teaching this, not me. I should be sitting at your feet because you've been through stuff and you have insight that the rest of us don't have. I've had some things, but nothing like that. And so God reminds me of that sometimes, and that actually helps a little bit. So, things happen. Life gets hard. It gets hard for everybody. Pain is pain. Whether your pain is bigger or smaller than someone else's pain, it's not the point. It hurts. Hurt hurts. Right? And how do we deal with it? And there's a lot of different, this is a big topic. I'm just kind of talking about one little aspect of it at the moment. Is it possible that possibly God has me doing downups? Is it possible that this pointless, frustrating, I don't know what this is for, trial is developing me somehow? Have you ever thought of that? That maybe God's developing you? Is it possible that God is doing that with our church? And he's developing BCC and he's creating in us a greater lung capacity for belief. He's developing strength for prayer and for outreach. Is it possible that these little trials are just practice and that the game is still coming? Friday's coming. Could that be? Could it be that we're learning to endure? Even in America, could it be that we're learning to endure? That we're being made stronger. And that when I say, where is God in this? Why is he leaving me in this? And in reality, he's just over here out of sight with the whistle going, come on, give me two more. You can do it. Keep going. Don't give up. You're getting stronger. You're getting stronger. You ever feel like that? James chapter 1 says this, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. He's telling us to consider it all joy when you encounter various trials. Who does that? Yay! My roof is leaking. Yay! This is wonderful. I am so happy. It's not joy. It's awful. It stinks. But that's why he says, consider it joy. Pretend it's joy. Because when you look past what's going on and realize what God's using it for, you can appreciate it. And you can say, thank you. Romans chapter 5 says this, not only this, but we also exalt in our tribulations. Have you ever exalted in your tribulations? Me neither. Knowing that tribulation brings about perseverance, and perseverance, proven character, and proven character, hope, and hope does not disappoint, because the love of God has been poured out within our hearts through the Holy Spirit who is given to us. We exalt in our tribulations. I have to do that on purpose. I have to really make myself do it because it's not your knee jerk when things are going badly. Endurance is produced by being tested. You see, there's really only one way to get endurance. It's to endure. You can't read a book on it. You can't take a class. You can't do a TED talk on endurance. There's only one way, is to be put through difficult situations that you are required to endure. This is why we esteem the aged among us. the elderly and why we should. Because they've been through stuff. Right? Do you ever look into the eyes of someone that's older than you and you see a lifetime of experience and the scars? This is why they deserve our respect and why we should sit at their feet. They've been through stuff and they've made it. But not just old people. If I mentioned a name, most of you would know who I'm talking about. Maybe I'll come back to that. Young lady who spent way too much time in the hospital lately trying to figure out why she has seizures. You know who I'm talking about, right? And no one's really been able to help her. And it's gone on way too long. And her family has been through so much. I don't even know what the expenses might be. But. And every time she posts something on Facebook, it's nothing but gushing about the goodness of God and his faithfulness and his mercy and everything opposite of what I would expect. She's my hero. She's amazing. She's the reason I'm on Facebook. I go there to find what's new. Everything else is. Hebrews 10:32. But remember the former days when after being enlightened you endured a great conflict of sufferings, partly by being made a public spectacle through reproaches and tribulations, and partly by becoming sharers with those who were so treated. For you showed sympathy to the prisoners who accepted joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing that you have for yourselves a better possession and a lasting one. Therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward, for you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. After all this that they had been through, the early church, he's still telling them, you still need endurance. How about that? 2 Corinthians chapter 4 says, therefore, we do not lose heart. Have you ever lost heart? I have lost heart. I have just many times recently said, I'm just done. I'm so sick of it all. Why did it all fall apart? I don't want to do this anymore. I just came here to be a Christian. I just wanted to go to church and worship and pray and maybe lead some people to Christ and just have a nice life. I didn't ask for all this. What is the point of this? Do not lose heart. But though the outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. There's something you could camp around. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal. The things which are not seen are eternal. So he separates everything into two camps. Seen things and unseen things. The seen things are what I focus on. That's what I'm all about. What's in front of me, what I'm dealing with, what affects my flesh and my feelings and all of that stuff. And Paul says, these are temporal things. They have to do with an outer man, which is decaying, by the way. Not just your bodies, but everything around us is passing away, we're told in 1 John. It's all passing away. Why am I hooked on, why do I have my affections and my heart tied into something that's dying? So there's a problem right there. That's for another Sunday. But it's decaying, for one thing. These are seen things. And he calls these afflictions momentary and light. And I would never tell anybody else that your afflictions are light. It's not my place to say, but he says it. God focuses on the unseen things. This is what he cares about, the eternal things. He calls them weighty and glorious, and he refers to an inner man that is being renewed day by day. Yeah, have you ever just sat and meditated on, I'm being renewed day by day? So he makes a comparison between afflictions, which are momentary and light, and eternal things, which are a weighty glory. So, weight is something that has substance. It's heavy. It makes a dent when you drop it. What have you ever thought, what God is producing in you through these afflictions is eternal and weighty. It has substance to it. You leave a footprint wherever you go because of what God's doing in your life. We heard about that from Barry. All they did was show up. And God is impacting and leaving a mark, because what's going on in them is not momentary or light. It's eternal, and it weighs something. That's the church, and that's you and me. And game day is coming. For some of you, it's here. You've already played your game, and then there's going to be another one. And it's Monday, and you're back to practice. It comes and goes. But a lot of the things I'm going through, they're just down-ups. I'm practicing. He's letting me practice on temporal things. For the church that this was written to, 2 Corinthians, that was written around A.D. 57. 7 years later was A.D. 64. You know what happened in A.D. 64? Rome burned. Most of the city was destroyed, and Nero blamed the Christians and the Jews. And that began a period of persecution that they hadn't seen before. Up until then, it was just mostly the Jewish leaders harassing them. Now you've got the weight of the Roman Empire coming after you. And for the next 250 years up to Constantine, the church went through various waves. It kind of came and went, but some really horrific stuff, and they stood up under it. In fact, they prospered. And by the time Constantine came around and probably wrecked everything, the church had grown and become a force to be reckoned with. They couldn't destroy it because it's unseen. All they can do is mess with the seen stuff. It's true. That's you, by the way. There's no early church. There's just the church. So what am I in training for? Am I losing this thing? What's my game day? So maybe God is allowing me to practice, like I said, on seen things, temporal things, light things that don't really matter in the long run, because practice is just that. It's just practice. The game day is weighty and glorious and eternal. So what kind of things does God have you practicing on? How about money? There's something that touches everybody. I hate money. I'm so sick of money. Got too much of it. No. That's not the reason. Many of you would know that we have a family business that my brother and my dad and I have been doing for about 20 years. And now we've added some sons and nephews, and we're blessed. But 20 years of this means we spent a lot of time broke. A lot of time where there's no money. What? This is America. There's supposed to be money. I'm not supposed to be. No. What? Why is this happening? Right? We work hard, we pay our dues, we play by the rules, and this shouldn't be happening, and yet it does. And the first few times, I'm like, okay, God's being, you know, he's testing me, and I'm going to be faithful. That was fine the first few times, but now it's 25, 30 times. Probably not, but I'm just using the down-up thing. And this is starting to get on my nerves, and this is starting to affect me, and I don't want to do this anymore. And so I complain, and I go to God, and once again, God has several responses. Sometimes he responds by just-in-time business coming in and good things happening. And other times I say to him, you know, I'm not asking to be rich. I don't want lots of stuff. I'm fine with the house we have. I really am. I don't need a better car. I don't need a summer home. I don't need expensive vacations. I don't need a snowmobile. I don't need a boat. Okay, I need a boat. But other than the boat, I just really want peace. I just want to go to bed at night and not care and not have to worry about this stuff. Can I just have that? Can you just send me enough so I don't need to worry about it? Right? Ever had that prayer? And he says, often, he goes, yeah, okay, we can do that. Or you can just stop worrying about money. That's not what I mean. But he says, you don't have to worry about it. Yes, I do. No, you don't. I got this. I've been faithful to you for the first 20 years. Yeah, but what about tomorrow? And at some point, along the way, it occurred to me, these are down-ups. I know the down. He's saying, keep it up. Get back up and keep going. One time he told me, I will take care of your business if you will take care of mine. And he has, you know. And that doesn't mean everything's great now. It isn't. But he is. He really is. Have you ever been there? These are down-ups. He's letting me practice on money. A temporal thing. Who cares about it? It's going to be gone. It's going to be gone. It's not eternal, but we're practicing on it. Have you ever had to wonder where your next meal's coming from? Well, I haven't, clearly. But there's a whole nation that did. They sure did. Israel walked through the desert from Egypt to the Promised Land, and they didn't have a clue of what to do next, and they were hungry, and God literally sent food from heaven and had it fall on the ground for them. All he had to do was go around and gather it up. But there were rules. There were rules. First of all, you have to get up early and go get it. We like that. We're Americans. But the second one is, you only get to take as much as you need for that day. However many people are in your house, you get so much for each person. And don't even think about collecting for tomorrow, because if you do, it's going to all rot. You're not doing that. What was the point of that? That's not how we think. This was literally daily bread. This is where it comes from. Give us this day our daily bread. I don't like daily bread. I want monthly bread. I want annual bread. I want a barn full of bread, filled up with bread, and another one with money, and another one with health, and all this other stuff, because I don't want to think about it. I just want it there, and I put a little lock on it, so anytime I want it, I can go get it, and it's settled, and it's dealt with, and I'm good. And God says, it's not happening. No, you're going to trust me every day. And so they got into this thing, and after 10 years, it's like, well, yeah, but what about tomorrow? Tomorrow's another day. And for the whole way through, God provided for them, and they were doing down-ups. They were learning to trust him, they were learning faith, and they were learning obedience. And that's the only way to learn it, is to be put in a position where all you've got is to trust God. You can't download that. I ask for faith, and I'm thinking God's going to like bring it down into the dove. No, he's going to put me in situations where I have to trust him, and there's nothing for it. I can't fix it. I can't do anything. It's just him. That's how you get faith. So, does God have you on manna? Is he providing for you, but just in dribs and drabs? A little bit of just-in-time stuff that keeps you nice and uncomfortable? And wondering, what about the next thing? No, it's a God thing. But take courage, it's temporary. They eventually got to the Promised Land, and they got to plant gardens and build homes and vineyards, and they got to live a more normal life, and the man stopped. So you're in training if you're on manna. So don't lose heart. It may only last 40 years. He who is faithful, Luke 16, in a very little thing, is also faithful in much. And he who is unrighteous in a very little thing is unrighteous also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the use of unrighteous wealth, I'm talking about money again, who will entrust true riches to you? What are these true riches? And if you have not been faithful in the use of that which is another's, like this world's stuff, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for he will either hate one, love the other, or else he will be devoted to one, despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. So which one do I serve? Maybe the one that keeps me up at night. So I'm learning. I'm learning to trust, and I'm learning to obey, and it's not always pretty. And God's letting me practice on temporal stuff. So what are we training for? And what are you in training for? And do you recognize that the stuff you're going through has a purpose? It's not just random awfulness. that God either doesn't know about or care about. It's just, you live in a fallen world. That's what happens. Well, there's truth there. And sometimes I create my own misery. In fact, more often than not. But our faithful God is using it to produce an eternal weight of glory. It's true. I think about our church. Been through a few things, haven't we? A lot of it's temporal. We're talking about this vision, this new vision for reaching out into our community. And it's quite a turn. It's quite a paradigm shift as far as how we're doing church. And talking about maybe being downtown, more of a permanent presence there so we can interact with the city more, with the people, and be available to them. And that involves a lot of stuff that's expensive. And there's a lot to talk about and a lot to think about, and certainly a lot of good questions that are being asked. Keep asking them. One question might be, you know, how we know this is going to work? What if we go through all this, spend all the money, open an office downtown, and it just flops? Doesn't work. I'll tell you, for me, just speaking for myself, I'm not so worried about it not working as I am that it will. You know what I mean? And we throw our doors open and people start responding. And people come to us. And demands are put on us. And stress, pressure, financial issues, lack of help, needs. How are we going to handle that when we realize very quickly how over our heads we are and that we have nothing? Is it possible that what's going on right now is training us for things like that? We're learning to trust Him. We're learning, hey, there's no money. How about that? I still haven't, those words have not been heard from me yet. But at some point, you know, learning to trust Him and obey Him. Maybe that's what's going on. I don't know. So what are you going through? Are you tempted to say, this is just God is ignoring me, or He's punishing me? Punishing you? No, no, no. The wages of sin is death. If God was punishing you, it'd be death. He already took care of that. Jesus took your punishment. But He is training you. And He is developing you. So that's my testimony. I don't know where I'm going yet with it, but that's where I'm at right now. I'm trying to respond to God and be faithful. Sometimes I do, and sometimes I crash and burn. But I'm in the process. So I hope perhaps this spoke to somebody. If it didn't, that's fine, but that's my story. And thank you for hearing me. Let me just pray for us, okay? Thank you, Lord, that you are the most excellent coach. Help us to hear you when you blow the whistle and cooperate with you when you train us. You have good things for us, but you get to decide what's good, not me. Help us to accept good from you on your terms. You are Lord, and you are sovereign, and you don't fail. Bless us, Lord, as a church and as families and individuals, and help us, Lord, to continue to keep going. In your name we pray. Amen.